Well, what kind of podcast would this be if we didn't start it with a plane going overhead and some beautiful bird song?
There's also a hell of a lot of rain.
We'll just wave that little one goodbye. Well, we are here to stay positive, folks, and that distractions and disruptions can come at any time. And as you can tell, we are very much directly under the flight path in this particularly beautiful park that you find us in today. It's feeling very autumnal. We have big coats on. Anna has a massive umbrella. And we're in a children's play area because that's the obvious place to record a podcast about mental health. So welcome to the podcast. This is Slimmer World Podcast. I'm Claire and this is
Anna.
So today we're looking at more the mindset aspect around weight loss, which I think is still not talked about enough. No. People think about weight loss as food. They think about it as exercise, but they don't always think about the psychological reasons of how did we get to the point that we wanted to lose weight in the first place? And I suppose like the middle grey area that happens between the before and the after photos.
100%.
And a big part of why we do this podcast is to really make sure that we remove some of the,
hurdles?
The myths around this.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think, you know, you really struggled. I found it very fascinating to watch with that grey bit in the middle, didn't you?
Yes, how, still do.
Yeah, and I watched so many people struggle with that. And I think it's knowing that actually you can find peace within that journey, can't you? But there are things that you can do that can really help you stay in control and boost your mindset and keep you motivated. There's always an answer, which is what I like in terms of staying motivated with weight loss. There is something you could do that's going to make the outcome better.
I think also what is interesting is it's almost like the after photos as
yes.
well. It's like almost another kind of layer. And we hear from people who have reached their target weight, but then there's a new journey ahead of that. And that's almost a different psychological shift in the maintenance phase as well. So weight loss and mindset are an interesting subject, and in the last week World Mental Health Day has been marked, and we thought maybe this is the time to kind of talk about some of the aspects of this, because we've been very open and honest, I think, about our mental health struggles, current, past, long time ago.
I don't know if you find this, but I found that my mental health, my anxiety, my depression have always been something that I have had to work on, and side by that has always been my weight, and they are so interconnected, and it's something that I have ebbs and flows with. I think with my mental health struggles, I've had to learn to accept that it will never be something I'm cured of. It's something I live side by side with. The same with my weight loss. It's something I'm always, and weight maintenance, something I'm always going to have to work on, and that gives me a little sense of calm. I don't know if it does with you. That
no, it doesn't give me calm,
doesn't it? Oh, it's really interesting.
No, I think actually it made me really
angry.
Peeved off.
Yeah.
Just by the way, in the background, that just happens to be a lawnmower.
It's a tractor, isn't it?
They're mowing the grass. Why are they mowing the grass in autumn and it's raining?
Because they heard we were here.
However, I'm going to use it as a metaphor, right?
Okay.
To explain this point. You talked about that you kind of just found that point of acceptance, like, right, these are things I'm going to have to do.
Yeah.
I was very much of the mindset of, like, what do I need to do to fix this?
Yeah.
I've fixed it. Now I can move on to the next thing.
No.
And actually, I was really annoyed that
we've got
a massive plane. And this is the worst place to record a podcast. And we're really sorry. We'll just wait for that massive one to go. I'm trying to make a serious point here, guys.
I mean, it's so low we can see what they've just eaten. We are seeing faces.
The idea of accepting that perhaps if you've had mental health struggles, and I think the term mental health is a bit murky for
Isn't
me
it?
As well,
yeah.
Because, you know, people almost think mental health as a term is a bit otherly.
Mm.
You know, they're not quite sure, well, what does that actually look like and
what
feel like? You know, it might be that you find that you're kind of pulling away from certain social groups. You're feeling sluggish. You don't want to get out of bed. you're punishing yourself with, you know, bad habits and, you know, behaviours that are just really unhelpful to you, and you almost feel out of control, like you can't stop. You know, people don't always talk about some of these things as being mental health. I remember I talked to a guy. I was making a series with Age UK in Cheshire a number of years ago, and we had a chat about his life after retirement, and he almost whispered into the microphone to me, you know, I've been working on my mental health. I've been for that thing called CBT. Do you know what that stands for? And it was almost like he was whispering because he didn't want others to hear. And I think that aspect of, like, just understanding what is mental health,
what does that mean to you,
and then is this something that will be just temporary, is it circumstantial, or is this something that perhaps, as you say, maybe there's a pattern here, and this is coming up again and again, and maybe it could always come up.
Yeah, and do you know what's, I think, fascinating and quite reassuring? I've got a six-year-old, and her school works on children's mental health and is dealing with issues with them now that if I'd had dealt with when I was younger, I probably wouldn't have struggled as an adult. But I think, we going back to that word acceptance, it took me a long time to accept both things, that I was going to have to work on my weight maintenance and work on staying well mentally. With more forgiving, if you were diagnosed with a physical condition like migraine, you would learn to live side by side and manage that. But with both struggles with mental health and other things, we think, oh, can I fix it? And actually, understanding there are things that you can do to help you with it, to boost your mindset, boost your mood, can be very empowering at a time when, I know, and I had my first nervous breakdown at 21. I don't think I've ever felt as helpless as I did in that time, because I had lost all control of my brain, and it was knowing that I had to kind of relearn skills to learn how to handle myself again. And so I understand how much fear comes when you struggle with your mental health, and then you're trying to lose weight or maintain weight loss in that. It can feel such a big burden, can't it? So it's knowing that, don't let this add to your pressure. Think about ways that you can enhance your well-being along your weight loss journey.
Well, yeah, it comes into that idea of, like, building a toolkit.
Yeah.
I think so many people, when they're on a weight loss journey, talk about the connection to the, you know, between emotions and their food.
Yeah, massive.
So, you know, emotional eating, again, so many podcasts that we've done as part of this series that dig into that, if that's something that you want to listen to a bit more. But sometimes it can feel like, a bit like the weather, like where we are today, that it's raining, there's grey clouds, there's not an inch of blue sky, and it's going to rain and be grey forever.
Yeah.
And you just don't feel like you have any kind of control to step out of that.
Yeah.
And actually, we've found an article, because one of the things that Slimworld really is great at is in the members area, when you do join up, whether you're a group online member, you do get access to lots of different features,
they're,
and you can search any kind of terms that you want. So we've just tapped into mental well-being, and it's got a brilliant article which talks about 10 ways to boost your mental well-being. You know, I've just whizzed through a couple of these first points here. Be kind to yourself. I mean, gosh, I feel like that's an ongoing process, really, of that for me.
Yeah. I don't know if you feel this, but it says something about the volume of your critical inner monologue. And for me, I think it's accepting sometimes when I'm stressed or anxious, the volume is very high, but learning techniques to live side by side it and understand.
A bit of like the volume of that plane right now.
But understanding, I control that. That's a really fascinating thing, because when you're struggling with your mental health, you feel a loss of control, don't you? But actually, there are things that I can do in the way I talk to myself and the way I handle myself that can stop me being so critical of myself. So that has really helped me to know that I control that.
Number two and three, I'm going to just put them together, if that's okay. Number two is step outside every day.
Mm.
And number three is get moving, which is why we came to a park to, ideally, we wanted to walk around and record, but all you'd ever hear is raindrops on the microphone,
and
which would be
squealing.
Horrible.
Yeah.
This was really important for me on the period where I really felt very low, which was around the same time that I rejoined and joined your group, Anna. There was a period where I'd left my permanent job and I was starting in the early days to build my own business. And it was a lot of emptiness and sat there, a lot of ruminating and worry and waiting. And one of the key things that really helped me was, it sounds a bit crazy now when I say it out loud, but I had a tree in a park that was about 20 minutes walk from where I lived in my flat. And I used to just, when I felt really stuck, I'd just put my trainers on and I'd walk through the park. Aww. And I'd walk to this tree. And it was a beech tree, which if you're into trees anyway, they've got really gnarly feet that remind me like the foot of Shrek.
Yes, that's
slightly
such a
good green
way to describe it. Yeah.
And I used to walk along the feet and the toes, and I'd not hug it, but I'd kind of walk around it, touch it, say
around
thank you. And then by the time I walked home, I just felt a little bit lighter. And, you know, I wouldn't have ever called that in my mind body magic, but essentially it is. And I think the outdoors has been really key for me in understanding, just even looking at the seasons, you know, ebbs and flows, darkness, dark nights come, but then lighter nights come back eventually. Mm. Cold winter times are here, but then
the
hot
leaves,
summer nights come back. The leaves will fall and get lighter, but then they'll grow new buds and come back. And realizing that nothing is
forever
stuck, nothing is permanent, that change is just part of life. And sometimes when I really felt sad, I felt like that sad was stuck and I was like a broken record that would never ever, you know,
change
track. And appreciating, I think, the outdoors and noticing small things like the birds that come and go, the trees, the wildlife, it just enabled me to be more present and
staying
think outside of myself.
Yeah. I remember when I first got poorly, a psychologist saying to me, stay in day-tight compartments, and how noticing those little things can really help. And there's something about the outdoors that just breaks your headspace. If you're sat indoors under the duvet eating your ice cream, just getting outside and smelling the air and doing something different can be so important psychologically. And we all know activity is not something that I've really ever fallen in love with, but I have to say walking this past year has helped my mental health so much and really helped me with fear of life moving on and all these sorts of things, and given me space, because I think sometimes we get so stuck in our own mind that we can just take a few minutes out, can't we, which can be really empowering.
I think there's physical movement though, isn't there?
Yes.
Because when you, if you're quite like a visual thinker, then you can feel like you're just stuck in like quagmire or like mud, and you're really stuck. And I find that that's when I'll kind of be scrolling through social media.
Yeah.
I'm just kind of trapped, really. Whereas I put the screen away and I physically walk, even if it's just a few slow steps of walking.
It's doing something, isn't
it? It's moving physically forwards through whatever grief or depression or anxiety. It's doing something positive. And I think that link between that mentally and that physically,
we're stepping
huge
out of it, aren't you? Yeah.
But a lot of times you say, well, I'm not really an exercise person, and so we add it to the list of things that I don't do. And actually walking.
And it's reframing that, isn't it? Like, actually, here's something I can do rather than sitting there and saying, here's something I can't do.
Here's what I also found really interesting is rethinking my aspects of food.
Mm.
And
fascinating.
Like, food for me had always been something that I used perhaps to squash my emotions.
Yeah.
But then with Slimming World, thinking about it as a way to get nutrition, also to fuel myself. And you think about like the fiber, the calcium, all the good stuff that were, you know, the vitamins, the minerals that we're having from really like whole food, fresh cooked like meals. It can only be a great thing for our body. I mean,
and your mind,
you know, we've read all about things like gut health in the press recently, and I know Slimming World's kind of looked into some of the research of that. They kind of do all the thinking behind this in the research team. But the connection between food and your mood is huge.
So big. And you think about highly processed foods, what they do for your mood, they give you a sudden lift, don't they, and then a sudden crash. And actually, if you can use the beauty of food optimizing and all those whole grain rich foods, fruits and vegetables, you're not going to get those highs and those lows. And I think that's what I spent many years seeking, was dopamine. Give me chocolate, give me ice cream to give me that. And actually, when I realized that was kind of the problem, I was seeking this high, and actually what I needed was consistency. You really see how food links massively into that. And that notion of calling it a treat, actually what now is a treat is going and spending some of my harder money on beautiful fruit, beautiful vegetables. Do you know what I mean? Nice food is far more of a treat than, you know, eating a family-sized bar of chocolate in 3 seconds.
See, the it talks about it actually in this article about this idea about your gut.
Yes.
And people are like, what is your gut? It's not quite your stomach, it's like the whole connective bit of your digestive system. But I think this is really interesting. Some 90% of the happy hormone, which is called serotonin, is made in the gut. And, you know, if you're someone who has been or are on antidepressants, you'll know serotonin comes up.
Yeah.
Serotonin is the you know, sometimes when we're anxious or depressed, we may lack the hormone serotonin. And to think that we could boost serotonin naturally from the food that we eat.
It's incredible.
Is like, what? Are you kidding me?
But isn't it exciting that you hold that ability in your own hands? So actually changing your eating habits can lift your mood because of the chemicals it contains. I love that.
Yeah, you know what? And obviously, if you're on antidepressants, we're not advocating that you come off the antidepressants and start eating lots of healthy food. Check with your doctor. Gotta say the obvious disclaimer there. But I think what this is enabling us to do is to really start to look at ways we can take control and look after ourselves.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I'm very honest about my antidepressants. I've been on them for many, many years. But I have to work on my food, my movement, my everything to stay well.
Connection is obviously a really important thing here, and support is a key thing that comes up again and again and again with Slimming World. I mean, you are a group consultant and have been forever, let's be honest.
Like
probably
it.
Longer like than you went to school, you've been a Slimming World consultant, have
How
you?
How long did you go to school for? I've been nearly 14 years. So there you go. Do you know, and I have to say this personally but also for other members, that connection with the online community, being in group, I see lifts such a burden, especially people who are struggling, getting that empathy, that support, that encouragement from other people. You feel so much better understood, and that can really help lift a burden, especially with food, but also with your mental health. Like, I see people coming into group looking sad and leaving smiling, and you know, that is a because of a direct culmination of lots of aspects of what happens in group. So connecting with people, connecting with friends, with your group, with your online community, knowing your tribe, really. We've talked about this before, finding your people, knowing what you deserve to have around you, and support is really key. Having people who understand where you are right now and where you want to be, I think is vital, isn't it?
Yeah. The other thing I would say is look at volunteering as well.
That's really helped you, hasn't it?
That's a whole other podcast, really, but there are ways that you can volunteer within your group.
Come on the social team,
absolutely,
befriend a new member.
Same, gives you that accountability that you know you are continuously committing to kind of connect with a group. And the opposite of isolation is connection. Finding your level. It talks about alcohol here. The effect that can have on your mental health. You know, Slimming World has some brilliant research which you can read about, the tipping point. And this talks about its connections with weight loss. I think that's it's almost something that not a lot of people, I certainly wasn't willing to admit, that drinking was having an effect on my mood, but also
massive.
My weight.
For me, it was admitting that it was both, and admitting that actually what booze did for me was lift me temporarily, but then, oh my God, the anxiety afterwards, the way I would then eat and cause more anxiety. Like, we both don't drink anymore, and for a number of reasons, but I have to say, for me, understanding how alcohol played into things, and understanding that if I could have moderated my alcohol, I would have had a much better balance in my weight loss and my mental health. For me, I stopped drinking for a number of reasons, but the biggest thing I've seen come out of it is my anxiety levels drastically changed. Because I'd have the fear the day after, like, what have I done? What have I said? What haven't I done? What have I said? What have I eaten? Do you know what I mean? And actually, understanding, for me, a life booze-free is a really powerful one, because I'm making every choice in a state that I'm conscious of. Because the food I used to eat when I'd had a drink, Claire, I don't know about you, but I would overconsume so ridiculously, and then the next day feel so unwell and re-overconsume and not move. And these things had such a knock-on effect. You know, go out drinking on a Saturday night and then have to get off for work on a Monday morning feeling like you've been run over by a tractor three times. It was not a good vibe, was it?
No.
You know, and I think for me, this isn't saying don't drink. This is saying, are you aware of how you drink and what you consume and the knock-on effect? Because if it is having a knock-on effect, it could be a really simple thing that could have such a huge knock-on effect, couldn't it?
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head there, because when I rejoined with you, I still was drinking at that point. I was working very hard with my food to try and fit everything in. And when I took time out of drinking, I think the phrase was like, take a break. Mm. Initially, I really kind of was thinking, am I normal? Have I got a problem here? A lot of things that I think, well, people have messaged me that they've been thinking in their head for quite a long time. And having a break just gave me a chance to really, like you say, explore, well, why am I drinking alcohol? Mm. What is it? What am I getting from it? Is there a more healthier and helpful way that I could get that buzz or that kick or that release? And it turned out, you know, for me, body magic, at the same time I took a break from alcohol, I really stepped into more movement and more body magic. And actually it kind of gave me a different high, you know, that was a bit more helpful for me. It's interesting. I mean, I've just celebrated 5 years of being drink free.
Oh my God.
And it really has been me being completely drink free. And previously I'd kind of took a break maybe for 30 days, took a break for 90 days, but then fell off the wagon. And I just feel quite liberated.
It's empowering, in that, isn't it?
You know, now I use my sins for cake and chocolate. And that's fine, and I'm happy with using the plan in the way that I want to, but perhaps I wasn't being honest with myself and how many sins was I actually consuming, and the unhelpfulness of what alcohol was causing me, that I found having mental health struggles plus alcohol was like adding fuel to a fire.
Yeah, it's like pure throwing petrol straight in it. It's really, you know what I had to understand? I couldn't have the weight loss I wanted and create the body I wanted while drinking the amount I was. And I was not able to moderate that. So I was a binge drinker. So if I wasn't able to binge drink, I wouldn't drink. But I was binge drinking so often. You know, I just was 7 years since I've had a drink. It was the day I got pregnant with Daisy. I haven't had a drink. And I lied. I had one sip of a mango mojito or something. I just don't miss it. I don't know about you. I can't imagine drinking now. But
that seems weird, because 5 years ago, if you said that to me, I'd be like, what?
Well, exactly. If someone had said to me, Anna, as a 42, nearly 43-year-old woman, you don't drink anymore, I wouldn't have believed you. But it's just showing you that if something feels like it needs to change, it can be such a positive outcome, can't it? I think about the cash I've saved.
It's just the energy that I gained.
Yeah.
The time, the money, and the energy that I gained. So then let's look. Number seven here is like about creating your comfort list.
So
let's say if we're taking away unhelpful things, what are the things that soothe us? What are the things that give us energy? Don't take away. Who are those people? What are those activities that are helpful to us? And they can be small or they can be big. I think this is the idea of treating yourself, which is almost like a bit of a dangerous phrase, I think, in the good, bad. How you use it, you've got to be careful.
Yeah.
But and I think comfort is an interesting way of putting it.
Isn't it? And thinking about foods that comfort you, because I think there's a big thing to know about food optimizing. Nothing is off limits. You know, I've got a brilliant Target member who has really thought about her comfort food lists that are food optimizable. So she knows when she's had a stressful week, she loves a mac and cheese, she loves a big burger and chips. So they're on the list. But she also, and I think this is so clever, has a non-edible list of mood lifters. So is it a hot bath? Is it seeing your friends? Is it, I don't know, going for a beautiful walk? Is it going and having a pedicure? Is it reading a book? So that you've got a comfort list, both that's food optimizable, but also that doesn't have an attachment to food or alcohol, because that is key. Because so many of us are so within these habits of, I get stressed, I do this. I get happy, I do this. And it's breaking those really deep habits of that food connection and that alcohol connection that will see you losing weight and, more importantly, keeping it off.
So the last three, you know, we can kind of pull these together, I think, is about talking your way to success, the language that we use, living in the moment, being present, and number 10, about choosing your future, you know, feeling like you're in control of your destiny, even when life gets in the way, and how powerful that can be as a well-being booster.
Wow.
I think all aspects of this about minding your language, being present.
Yeah.
Sometimes my mind can kind of often be in the past or in the future. It can be stuck on things that have hurt me, or, you know, things I feel guilt or shame about in the past. And then it can also be the prepping and the anticipation and anxiety over the what ifs of the future. But sometimes it can just be about, right, let's come back today. And I'd say on my most difficult times, I'd have to almost look at life hour by hour. 100%. I'd struggle even to decide what clothes am I going to put on today. I couldn't make any decisions. I was just completely frozen. And I think that idea about being present teaches you to be like, right, how do I feel and what do I need?
Yeah.
This is a really helpful two questions that a counsellor had said to me to help me come back to being present.
Love that.
How do I feel and what do I need? Because quite often when you say, okay, well, how do I feel? It might not be that the to-do list that you've got and a whole had planned for you today. It's not really going to work out.
No. And it's knowing that you can change that, you can control that. But sometimes we're so driven by what have I got to do for tomorrow and what's going to happen and what happened yesterday, that actually if you stay in the now, you're far less likely to be reactive than if you are looking behind or in the future, I think. Because both you don't have any control over, do you? And I think the thing that I've had to learn is I can only worry about the things I can control. The things I can't control, if I give my energy to, they're going to stop me controlling the things that I can, you know? And it's very much focusing on what is possible, not is impossible. And when you're struggling with your mental health, you can feel totally paralysed, can't you? I know I have.
I think it's really interesting that the last point it says about choosing your future, because, you know, yes, we are talking about being the present, but what can you do today that will be helpful for your future? So it talks about batch cooking recipes, about setting out a goal or a target, looking at for against lists, all the different tools that Slimming World has, maybe setting aside a time to make a plan for your week, your food meal plan, setting time, you know, to journal. I think actually these aspects can even be just choosing your future of the next week for the next weigh-in, and that seems a little less intimidating than where do I want to be in 5 years.
Oh my gosh. And when you're struggling with your mental health, well, your mental health, you don't know you're struggling with it, that's intimidating, that's overfacing, isn't it? So really thinking about, I often say to my members, putting in your diary your 30 minutes to be in group and get that support, putting in the half an hour to do your shopping list, to do your food prep, they are things that are going to serve you well for the future. But find things that work for you. Like, you might, the thought of batch cooking might turn your stomach, but actually getting in the range from Iceland might help you, or some ready frozen bags of veg. Like, really just thinking about what you need for your future and not making it another point to make you feel like a failure, I think is really key, isn't it?
I think the thing that we've learned, even since doing like our first couple of episodes, episode 1 and 2, Anna and Claire's story, really kind of say about our journey of how we ended up getting to where we were, even like what, nearly 5 years ago. But I suppose the thing that I've learned is that you don't need to know all the answers today.
No.
To have an open mind and to try things, and don't face, you know, the phrase around World Mental Health Day is about end stigma now.
Yes.
And that, you know, we've had people who say, because we've talked openly about going for therapy, about getting help, about speaking to our doctor, that it's meant that people have taken the courage to step forwards and go and get the help they needed. And that's the only reason of why we do the podcast.
Yeah. It's why we started, wasn't it? So that no one felt as low or as lonely as we did, that they knew that you can always get some help and support.
Or, as just happened next to us, you can always mow your lawn.
Yeah, you can always guarantee if we're recording a podcast, there'll be some noise.
That's it. Maybe if we looked after ourselves as much as we looked after our lawn, we might be in great shape. Although, looking at my lawn,
but I've got artificial grass. What does that say about me?
And that's why we come to parks and stand under flight paths and watch other people mow the lawn.
But doesn't it show, actually, that's a really great analogy, how different we are, but how we have found that using very similar techniques has helped us to overcome or get through our battles. Not overcome, but we're getting there.
Yeah. So we hope this has been helpful to just kind of, I don't know, talk about some of the different aspects of mental health, decode some of the myths around what is it, all that kind of stuff, and it gives you things to think about. Our next public podcast, we'll be talking around habits. Actually, we're talking to an amazing lady, Alice, who is the Diamond Member of the Year for 2023, and we want to kind of speak with Alice about, so how is she keeping the weight off?
Yeah, because she lost over 8 stone, didn't she?
Exactly. And she's kept it off for 5 years. So that idea of like kind of the longevity of the plans that we're putting in place today, how do we make it stick? So that's that. And if you're a member, then you can pick up our next podcast, which is next week, which is It's the Little Things. Anna's got a brilliant scoring quiz to kind of find out, are you really food optimizing or are you doing
your own version?
Insert names world. Right, well, as another plane lands or leaves, we will leave like the leaves on the trees are in this park.
Wow. All I'm thinking is this rain is that maybe need the loo. That's all I can think about.
Yeah. Well, and by the time we finish this podcast, actually,
it's going to stop raining, hasn't it?
It's actually stopped raining. So, guys, the moral of the story is
never give up.
Have a great week.
Bye for now.